This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests today are former co-workers and friends, Kevin Plexico of Deltek and Scott Lewis of PSP Partners. Scott, lead off here. When I met both you guys, you both worked at Input.
Correct. I'm not sure when it all started, back in the late 50s or something. I think.
Sometimes. Don't go back that far, Scott.
No. At Input back, I guess, in the 90s. I was there for 8 years or so with Kevin, and actually moved out and even came back for a year or so. About 7 years ago.
Yeah,
so
and I called you when that happened and asked why.
Yeah, well, what's the next subject there? No, I've known Kevin for a long time. Good friends, and he's a smart guy in the industry, no doubt about it.
So tell the people what you do, please, because it's been a while since you've been on.
Yeah, PS Partnerships. I support a number of unique technology firms. Mostly they develop technology, like software, what have you. Not always, but usually. And part of their strategy is to connect with the systems integration community, because those guys capture most of the business and support the majority of what goes on in a government agency. So they have strategies to sell direct and take down orders, but at the same time, they're trying to get business through the SI community and support them as they bid new opportunities and also on existing contracts, too. It's a stream of revenue for them. So I focus on that, connecting them to the SIs that might care about what they bring to the table.
Cool. And Kevin, you analyze all the numbers and have since you were, what, in junior high school?
Sadly, it's been a long time that I've been analyzing federal budgets. I always tell people I'm cursed by being surrounded by a group of people who find federal procurement interesting.
Well, you know, it's a strange universe we work in, but it's ours and we like it. For whatever perverse reasons that may be. I want to talk about end of FY spending and how all of these recent things, LPTA, the perpetual continuing resolution, strategic sourcing even, and most importantly, sequestration. How is this going to impact this end of FY? I've been doing this for over 30 years, and I've never seen this confluence come together at this time.
Well, I mean, I guess I'd back up a little bit on the sequester, because I think that is important to talk about the timing with which that happened. It happened midway through the fiscal year. And since it happened midway through the fiscal year, there's already been a fair amount of spending that took place. But then what we saw really in the data that we have is a pretty significant kind of pause as agencies kind of took inventory and took stock of what's going on in the market, what budgets they were going to have, how much they were going to have to spend. And that's just, I think, just now starting to flow a bit more. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to have our classic and typical kind of year-end buying spree like we always do. It's just not going to have the same dollar amounts that we've had in previous years.
Do you anticipate anything coming from OMB telling people to restrain spending?
No, I think there's, you know, actually legal requirements. They have to spend the money that they've been appropriated. And so I think that's, you know, that's part of the cycle we're in. So I don't really see any guidance on that. Any other than we've seen already with them acknowledging that agencies need to be careful with their dollars to grapple with the budgets they have.
Okay.
Yeah. From talking to the SI community and even my clients that are more on the product side, a lot is slipping to the right, not officially being canceled, but for folks that are expecting revenue in this particular quarter, actually, have been some of my clients saying we've been surprised about the high percentage of opportunities that are being slid to the right. But the good news is we don't see a lot of things canceling, but the bad news is we don't see it dropping down right now. But they're assuming it's still going to come by the end of the year, a lot of it, I think.
Yeah, I would just echo that in terms of the procurement activity that we track. Very few contract cancellations, which is one of the fears that agencies were going to have to cancel contracts. to get to the budget levels that were set, but we've seen very little of that. We have seen quite a bit of slow down on existing contracts, kind of reducing some of the scope a little bit, reducing or slow rolling some of the spending.
When you say existing contracts, you're talking current or evolving?
Contract vehicles that are in place.
Okay.
And then, you know, related to what Scott just mentioned, lots of procurements where the RFPs have slipped to the right and lots of awards that have slipped to the right.
Okay. So anything further there?
No, I think when you're looking at, from a product standpoint, if you're looking at 30, 60, 90-day business, it scares the corporate heads quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I think the SIs deal with it much easier than the product firms.
Right. Well, they're here on a longer-term basis, so that could help. Let's talk a little bit about the DoD budget. I mean, that's probably, Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong here, going to be the long-term shrinker, if you will.
And I think in the long term, it's probably not going to shrink, but it's going to be very, very flat as a pancake. The big question really in defense spending is what happens with the Overseas Contingency Operations Fund, or the war spending that's been occurring, that's been in the many billions of dollars for a number of years. And that, frankly, has been the biggest source of reductions in defense spending over the last several years. So what happens with that will have a lot to do with the direction the defense budget goes.
Who's that going to squeeze?
It's going to squeeze the major defense contractors. Defense logistics is the biggest area that's probably going to be impacted, and all the supply and logistical support that goes along with, you know, supporting the people there.
Okay. Now, yeah. I heard a rumor that they're going to be ordering fewer Abrams. Does this mean I can pick one up from my front yard?
Well, apparently they're destroying them out in Iraq. So if you can get out there and get one and get it back, you have one to drive around town.
Tell those logistics people to ship one over, will you? Love to have one of those in the front yard. Scott, any thoughts on the DoD
from an IT perspective, we're starting to see a lot of the shared services consolidation from an IT perspective, which is probably a very, very good thing, obviously, with so many, you know, areas within DoD and locations and data centers and what have you. But the agencies seem to be communicating about shared services. DISA, I think, is really trying to position themselves to be the delivery of a lot of the communications networks and email and that type of thing. And then you're starting to see a lot of the cloud type services being considered, like within Army, mostly private type things. But I think they're being forced to look at sharing some of the services, sharing some of the budget dollars to kind of improve IT services within DoD. But I think the flatness of the budget is getting them to think out of the box, where it's never been done before really in the past, which is good news, I think.
Okay.
And that's playing out from a budget point of view as well. If you look at the defense IT budget, the armed services budgets are going down, but the OSD, or the central budget, is going up, which I think is speaking to Scott's point about how we're seeing more consolidation initiatives and more joint activities that are really being affected because of the budget environment they're in. They're having to make some of these trade-offs and decisions around consolidation that they've been able to get away without having to make in the past when dollars were flowing.
Okay. Now, the other budget issues, who's going to be the big winners here, Kevin?
VA continues to have a strong outlook from a budgeting point of view. You know, when we have periods of war and soldiers come back from war, they move into the benefit programs that are provided to our nation's veterans, and healthcare costs obviously are going up. So that's probably the one that's, I would say, the slam dunk in terms of budget growth. Everybody wants to be doing business in that agency. Some of the other ones, the Department of Treasury, kind of on the front line of implementing a lot of the tax collection side of Obamacare, also has some pretty significant upside opportunity, and HHS related to that, and the Medicaid and Medicare side, to the extent that we're implementing Obamacare, their budgets are going up as well. So those are some of the bright spots, but there are, you know, there are others as well.
Do you think they're long term, especially the HHS? Do you think they're long term bright spots, or does that remain to be seen?
I think it's hard to say. Obamacare has been, you know, obviously a very contentious issue since it originally passed, and the House has been on a mission to kind of tear it down. It's one of the appropriations bills that never gets done because there's too much political conflict over that piece of legislation, but we still continue to see investments from an IT perspective in that area.
Okay. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We will be back after these messages. Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests today are Scott Lewis and Kevin Plexico. Kevin is the, what is your official title there at Dell?
Vice President of Information Solutions.
There you go. And Scott, and you can find him at DellTech.com. What, PSP Partners?
PS Partnerships.
PSPartnership.com. And you are the minor deity there.
Right? I am the CEO and chief bottle washer, yes.
Yeah, yeah. We both take out our own garbage, yes.
That's right.
Scott, you had a few hot areas for the spending, too, from the SI perspective.
Yeah, when Kevin's talking about where the money might be by agencies, the activities that I've been seeing and talked to the SI community, and not in this any particular order, but FAA, there's a lot of activity there that's still kind of waiting to go forward, but there's a lot of activity there to position themselves and try to take advantage of when that money comes out around air traffic and some other things. VA especially, and lining up their partners, because a lot of that money is going to go to disabled vet. A lot of those guys are going to play a role as a sub, so they're positioning themselves for that money. Anything healthcare, anything HHS, anything around fraud, waste, and abuse is important for them. There's some good State Department activity also that I think that they're jockeying and positioning themselves for. And then, of course, a lot of the movement within DOD. But those are the areas that I'm seeing some positioning, making sure that they have the right partners lined up and they've influenced the agency as much as they can to show that they're qualified to win the business.
Now, on the education side, do we see any major push towards pushing STEM activity? I know that's a surprise question, but it's one that I'm interested in.
I've seen it. There's a fair amount of money requested for it in the president's budget, but it also comes along with a lot of other likely politically contentious funding topics that I imagine are going to run into a meat grinder in the House.
Okay. Nothing there?
No. Okay. I don't know about that.
All right. Scott, this is an area near and dear to your heart. The WashTech's Top 100 came out a couple weeks ago. And as usual, the ever since the competition and contracting
Lockheed Martin's
came
still
out,
number one, yeah.
Jack Brooks is probably spinning in his grave. There's still 20 of them. But there's a lot of stability in the top tier. And the top tier you could count as the top 20, 25, or even 50. And there's not a lot of churn there. Give me your...
No, there's not. There hasn't been any, I guess, new players bouncing in the market that maybe were not in the IT business but strong in government, let's say. I think you're going to see some changes here with... SAIC breaking into two, Leidos and SAIC. L3 really is breaking up in pieces too. I don't know whether that's going to be rolled up under still an L3.
It's Leidos, not Leidos?
Leidos, I'm sorry. Leidos, you're right.
So we get pizza too.
Yes, you do. The other, I mean, it's nice to see that list and get an idea who the top players are, especially if you're a technology firm and you're trying to create a hit list of potential partners. I mean, that's a great list to work off of. And with, you know, the Dell Tech data, you can get an idea where they're embedded, what agencies do they own, and that kind of thing. So it's nice to pick apart that data for teaming and partner reasons. But that list probably would look completely different if you were able to capture subcontracting dollars. There's a lot of business, a lot of contracts that are being recompeted, but they're being pushed to the small business. And you look at VA and other places, and those guys in the top 25, 35, 40 are subcontractors on a lot of these contracts. So I think that list would shift dramatically if you could capture that money, and it'd be a much more accurate look at really who the top contractors
are. Do you think any of the second 50 would migrate seriously higher?
Probably not. I think a few might. Okay. Yeah, maybe like an SRA or someone like that, I think might bounce up a few slots also.
Some of them might bounce down too, because they subcontract a lot of the work, or it's effectively pass-through dollars for equipment that they're selling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that too. A lot of them hold the – well, that would be interesting too from a product standpoint, is how much product is actually being pushed through these SIs. I mean, that, to me, I think that would be an interesting number. How much technology flows through them versus direct.
Well, you're in an ideal position to answer this question. How interested are the SIs in equipment?
Not for profit, but to create a unique solution, a technical solution that from a tech bake-off could get them extra points into winning a contract. It's still sort of, you know, best price, but the technical offering does carry a lot of weight. So it's not to sell and to make 3 points off of. It's as I pull all these technologies together, do I have a competitive advantage against who I'm bidding against?
Now, when they're doing products, are they striking deals directly with manufacturers, or is this where they're trying to fill in those set-asides?
With the big guys, with the EMC, the Ciscos, NetApps, this most likely a direct relationship. Once you get below that, then you're either dealing through a distributor. Or most like, you know, companies like Citrix and others, almost 100% of their stuff goes through a partner. So a partner in most cases, when you get away from that top 5 or 10 big technology firms, you're usually dealing with a reseller or a distributor to bring that product in. But in the security space, if there's a true alliance that's put together, that's going to go to market, repeatable solution, then they'll probably work direct with that manufacturer. But that's not that common, really.
I just want to add one thing around the kind of the top 100, and I think there's an interesting characteristic in this market because we have protected socioeconomic groups that we cultivate in small businesses, and they grow up, and then they graduate out of these programs or get beyond the size requirements for these programs. They kind of fall into this middle area of not big enough to go after the big work and the big contracts, but no longer in the protected state. And so that's typically the time that those companies sell, and they typically sell to the ones that are in the top 100. So the top 100 continues to buy up the middle ground, and the cracks are filled in by the small companies who are kind of living off the socioeconomic status, still doing great work, but they're getting protected dollars sent their way.
Right.
Yeah, so, and these, there's not that many new large contracts out there. So the scary thing for those smaller companies that have graduated is some of these larger contractors are now going after smaller work. So you're having competition in some spots that you might not have had before.
And that's been going on for about 3 years now.
Yeah, and the recompetes too. A lot of the activity from the SIs is just keeping what you got, trying to find your way to reduce cost on this thing and be able to win it at a cheaper price.
Okay. Well, then maybe in our wrap-up session, I'm probably going to ask you guys, what can these small companies do to make themselves a little more attractive to those big guys? So be thinking about that as we migrate on. Mr. Obama had a couple of major areas in his budget that he still wants to push: the healthcare, the education initiatives, and the transportation. Are these going to get any traction?
I think the transportation one may. There's certainly been broadly reported about the challenges we have in our nation's bridges. Many of them falling into disrepair and not a lot of investment
around that. Or just falling.
Yeah, falling, yeah. So there seems to be a lot of political support and will to do something about that. And the FAA, certainly air transportation, is an area that continues to get dollars. And there's a high technology component to that, which I think Scott was alluding to earlier. So the transportation world feels a lot more secure and has a brighter future than probably the education space. But frankly, the education market from a federal contracting point of view is not a very big market. It's most of that money flows down to the state and local world. And certainly there's lots of pent up demand in the K-12 world because they've been, you know, on the front line of the budget crisis the states faced back in the 2008-2009 timeframe. And they're really just starting to emerge out of that.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And also transportation, not just FAA, but also the infrastructure. You get votes taking care of that stuff too. So and that goes right down to congressmen, senators, and how they're going to deal with their constituents.
I've heard, not seen a lot, but I've heard some about larger contractors, even some of the major SIs, focusing on more state and local business, which would include the ed. Are you seeing that at all?
We have seen a lot of companies that typically were focused on federal looking at state and local because it's starting to become a brighter picture in the state and local world than it is in the federal world, which is kind of bucking the trend that we had back in the late 2007, 2008 timeframe. So, yeah, that seems to be an area where if you're looking at growth opportunities, the state and local space is a logical adjacent market that companies can go after if they have some of the skill sets that can apply in that same market.
Okay. Yeah, like healthcare would be one, and public safety would probably be the other that they could leverage from feds to the states. but they're leveraging what they're doing well in the states.
Cool.
Sorry, in the feds.
Okay. When we come back, we'll go after some of the major growth areas. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here with Scott Lewis of PS Partnerships and Kevin Plexico of Deltek. And we're talking now about the growth areas for contractors. Scott, lead off, please.
Yeah, the investment, I guess, that you see the SI community and where they're looking to build alliances and go-to-market strategies. And this is probably no big surprise, but even front page of Washington Post, you're seeing big data articles, especially with NSA activities and that type of thing. So all agencies everywhere keep pretty much everything, and big data is prevalent throughout all of government, and it's not going away. Then the analytics, being able to make sense of all that, and that's, again, true in a lot of areas. That is not only just the intel community. From really all parts of business now, the data is being analyzed to improve processes, improve citizen service to the citizen. Anything healthcare related, whether it's clinical or not, and I mentioned fraud, waste, and abuse, a lot of big data analytics associated with that. Mobility is not a lot of money now, but everybody's positioning themselves in that market. It's in a way, it's somewhat commodity. A lot of pilots going on, but every integrator out there has tasked somebody or some group to own the mobility practice. And the applications associated with that are really where the services are, I think, is what they're leaning towards doing. Anything security, there's a couple contract vehicles that are about to be awarded now that the agency is going to be able to have access to through DHS, hopefully get some money for security there. That's a big contract that folks are waiting for that to be awarded.
Now you're talking cyber, physical, both?
CDM.
Okay.
Continuous monitoring type of a contract that DHS is awarding soon. And that's going to be an IDIQ, and there's a lot of partners on that, and agencies are going to be able to access that. And then really anything as a service. You're seeing mobility management as a service now, but that's cloud-based or whether it's public or private, but really the SIs are trying to come up with ways of being able to offer things as a utility, no matter what it might be, but if it can make sense into an agency. So they're trying to create unique partners to offer things as a service, even like Polycoms, and video conferencing, those kinds. The VA is looking at that as a service.
Well, they're migrating that way anyway, because with reduced travel, the training has to take place in the distance learning format.
Right.
So that's been a growth area for a while. It's just, when Hewitt owned Federal Sources, he bought a whiteboard company that was a smart whiteboard company where you could write on board in one area and it would show up across the country on theirs.
But anything unique offering besides the kind of the traditional stuff that you've been seeing, but there's a lot of conversation on that within the SI community too.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess I'll just comment on a couple of those areas. And I think one of the things you find in the federal IT world is there's often more hype than there is dollars. Mm-hmm. I think some of these areas are kind of hypey. Cloud computing certainly is a big opportunity, but I think the impact on the market is less about the dollars spent and more about the way agencies are buying and the types of contracts and the types of pricing mechanisms that they're using is really forcing companies that were used to selling perpetual licenses to rethink their whole licensing strategy. And it has a really significant impact on their income statement. And so that's the big challenge that I see for companies is how are they adapting to that environment and how quickly agencies move to those pricing models. Everybody's a cloud provider now, or at least says that on their marketing collateral, whether they are really providing cloud services or not. But that has more of an indication of the way that they're pricing their products than their products actually providing cloud-like services. I guess the other area I would comment on that I think has potential big upside, if you're following the immigration reform legislation, there's about $30 billion that's in that legislation for border technology, fencing, some of its infrastructure, but there's a lot of IT and technology in that would be a big boost in that space too. So I think that's another hot area to watch. The one thing about the Department of Homeland Security, they've had budgets that have continued to go up and they still are going up, but because of the nature of their mission, there's a very large percentage of their dollars that are spent on technology-related products and services.
Okay.
Yeah, when you talk about the border, if you even take that further with any type of physical security also, not just on the border, but through all government buildings and facilities and throughout DOD, that's a huge market that I'm starting to see some of the SIs that typically weren't doing that. Because that's, at one time, physical security was really completely different than your IT shop. I mean, it's just completely separate. And all that now has been merged together. And even accessing through CAT cards and getting through buildings, that's all IT related now too. So anything security, whether it's IT security, but the physical security piece, I think is huge.
Well, and they're really converging too. I mean, you see physical security and IT security converging around not just CAT cards, but the technology that's used to secure a facility is a lot different now than it was just 5 or 10 years ago. Yeah. So I think that's another interesting area to pay attention to.
And some good acquisitions in that area too. I mean, look at Schneider Electric now. They're all of a sudden now being talked in the same breath as other SIs.
Okay. So what's Schneider bring to the table?
It was all about physical security. They've been acquiring a lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm. That kind of leads also, which we haven't really talked about, is another area of the market IT related is energy. Schneider is offering, I'm forgetting the agency, but there are contract vehicles that allow you to do this where the agencies really don't spend anything. They give out a contract and it's a task order contract to come in and improve, reduce my energy costs, whether it's IT or others, and I'm going to pay out of my savings over a period of 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. And Schneider's doing that now. I think they're literally doing roof repairs, I think, at Air Force, but they're putting solar panels on top of the roof as they're repairing it. And from that contract, they're going to get paid back and make profit over a period of time.
So it's the extension of the greening of government.
Right.
Okay. And Kevin, you know, you talked about hype not realizing itself in dollars. Several years ago, the green government thing was really hot, and it's backburnered, but it's still there because the LEED compliance for new buildings and retrofitting is still there. Is there money there?
I think there is money there. It's not been money in the areas that we talked about a few years ago where it was all about green computing. Mm-hmm. Now it's about energy-efficient buildings, power-efficient buildings, and then in the military, you have this program called Net Zero, which is the notion that what is used by the military is returned to nature in the same form. So water that comes in the building is returned back to the same streams. They're neutral in their power footprint. Waste production is kind of comes back out clean the other side. So there's a big investment there. They're running pilot programs around some of the bases in the country, and there's real money there for companies that can grasp that technology, that capability, and make a strong case for it, how it's going to save money too. But I think it does come back to, at the end of the day, not just the environmental question, it has to also contribute to money cost savings.
Okay, now that kind of begs the question. This isn't the sweet spot for our normal top 20 or top 50. However, the companies that might fit that don't have the contractual experience to come in here and play the game right. So are they going to come in partnering with experienced companies that do know the contract arena?
I think we're going to see a lot of M&A activity in that area. I already know a lot of the integrators have components of their business. SAIC, for example, has a pretty significant component of their business that's focused on the energy side.
The pizza part or the other part?
It's probably the pizza part now.
Okay.
So partnerships between it is generally where it starts, but I think acquisitions is probably where it's going to ultimately end up. You know, one of the interesting things about the federal contracting world is the know-how of how to do business in the federal world allows you to do a lot of different kinds of work. So it's not like you generally have pure play technology companies. You think about a company like Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman. They do everything from logistics to construction of complex military systems and equipment to IT to routine maintenance services to base operations. I mean, it's the full gamut of services that you can provide. And the reason that works is because they have that channel into the government and that contracting mechanism and know-how to do business with the government. They've already gotten through a lot of the hurdles of doing business with government.
Okay.
Yeah, you're seeing Dominion Power, Constellation Energy, even Con Ed, Florida Power. All these guys now are having conversations with contractors, but also directly with government. They're positioning themselves to be consultants, playing the Booz Allens and Deloitte's now into government to find ways to reduce energy usage.
But, you know, that still begs the question from my perspective. If they don't have a tradition of dealing with the government, are they going to be stepping into neck-deep kimchi?
Could be. If they're going to try to bid direct, they're going to have some strong consultants on their team to help them try to position themselves and respond the right way. If they win, can they deliver in this government environment? Can they understand SLAs and make sure they can manage that so that they look good as in performing the contract? You know, to be seen. But the conversations are, like Kevin said, Lockheed Martin, Northrop, and a number of others now have energy types of businesses within that. So they could be competition. They could be teaming partners. Like with any type of major contract, one day you're bidding against each other, the next day you're teaming. So it depends on the procurement. It depends on the agency. It depends on the specs within it. Is going to lead how that those partners come together or not come together.
Any thoughts, sir?
Nothing to add.
Cool. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. When we come back, we're going to talk about how some small businesses or any business can partner with these big companies to make further inroads into the government market. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guests today are Scott Lewis, PS Partnerships, Kevin Plexico, Deltek. The final topic for today is partnering, subcontracting, teaming, how businesses can grow their footprint through any sort of partnering process with larger firms. Scott.
Well, you're looking really at two types, or I guess three types of businesses when it comes to contracting. You have product companies. That could be an Oracle, a Citrix, or what have you. They develop a technology. They might have some services. Then you have services companies, mid-size, small, 8A, disabled vet. Then you got typically the big guys out there. I'll start kind of with the services companies. This, I think, is the biggest challenge of all this is being an 8A or a mid-size integrator. The hurdle is for these guys is a lot of them do a lot of things. They do just what a large integrator does, but on a small scale. And a lot of them don't have a specific niche, a specific swim lane. And that's where I think it starts to bog down. They're trying to be everything, and they can say they can do everything. And getting the attention of a prime contractor to be a sub is very difficult when you don't have a specific swim lane. So in talking to some of these companies over the years, I think Kevin would agree to this because they've talked about this in some of their presentations, but getting these guys to be able to focus on one or two key areas and especially growth areas, whether it's the growth area of mobility, growth area of security, but they're going to have to pick some growth area and have expertise in that and have some type of contract success around that. If they can do that, then it's a little bit easier to identify opportunities, doing market research, identify who the top contractors are, and being able to speak to the requirements around that contract and their past performance and capabilities and why I'm going to be valuable to your team. And also speaking, what is my value to you, prime contractor? How can I help you win this opportunity versus, which the conversation seems to be the other way around, where a small business is in front of an integrator asking them what they can do for me. On the product side, it's a little different because they do have a specific swim lane. Being able to understand the procurement, understand the requirements, and speak specifically to the requirements. Why my technology can add tremendous value around these specs that are coming out within this procurement. That type of conversation is tremendously important. Being able to, again, identify who the top contractors are that own contracts, that own that agency, and then it's really just blocking and tackling sales 101 and reaching out to the prime contractors and being able to determine or ask questions and figure out who are the BD folks or who owns that agency, because I can support the specific requirements coming out of that in a very unique way, and I can add value to you as you build your technical solution against this opportunity. It's really a lot of common sense to me, but you find people just either not approach an ESI or just approaching it in such a way where they're asking for help versus offering some value to the integrator. There's a lot of great data out there through Deltek to be able to determine who holds contracts. They have vendor profiles that give a lot of contact points, a lot of email addresses and titles of who's within that systems integrator. And just by reaching out to some of those people and putting together a strong value proposition, the odds are pretty good that they might respond back to you and say, here's the person you need to talk to. If you've ever run a sales organization, these are really just sales tactics to get you to a potential customer to be able to present your value to them. And you see people either just not doing it or doing it in a very small way and not making it part of their business process. You know, if you make it part of your business process, this is what we're going to do every day to get in front of the right people, to create value, to build a team, to go win something. If that's part of your go-to-business strategy and somebody manages that on an everyday basis and measures that, the odds are pretty good you're going to be talking to some pretty good people and you're going to start developing teams over a period of time. The other problem that you see, whether it's a services company or a product company, is they pull the plug too early. This has been a lot of work. We've done this now for 6 months, and we really haven't built an alliance. Well, it takes a lot more than 6 months to do that, a lot longer than that.
Well, the American Express study that came out now almost 3 years ago, I guess, maybe it was 3 years ago, finally documented what we all knew, that it's an 18 to 24-month process. And they came up with 19 and a half months. But the caveat there, it was for companies that were spending an average of $89,000 a year, either in cash or internal resources, devoted to identifying partners and going after specific business.
I mean, I have a couple things to add to what Scott shared. I mean, I think, first of all, for small businesses today, it definitely, we're in an environment where it has to be about more than your socioeconomic status. That is helpful, but is not going to get you picked by a company as a subcontractor. We've done some research on teaming and what prime contractors look for in subs, and there were really three things that bubbled up as the three things they look for when they're picking a subcontractor. They want somebody who's got some specialized agency experience. Maybe it's a company who doesn't have experience in a certain agency, so they want a partner who does. And so if you happen to have experience in a particular agency that one of your prime partners doesn't, you know, that's going to be a good fit. Certain capabilities that you have, subject matter expertise that you can bring to the table, whether it be around, you know, how certain government programs operate or certain technologies or technical capabilities. So something unique in terms of your offering, which I think is what Scott was referring to in terms of swim lanes. Mm-hmm. And the last one is past performance. That's one of the key evaluation criteria that that agencies look at now. And so having a robust, strong past performance is kind of a key component to help you differentiate yourself and allow a prime to differentiate their capability in the market.
Okay. Let me ask a slightly different question here. Scott, you were talking about your traditional sales methods of identifying the right people to talk to. Are you leveraging LinkedIn for your clients at all this way?
Yeah. I leverage whatever I get access to. I have a very extensive database of people within the SI community because I've been walking the halls there for a long time. So
right.
I have that. All of the folks that I support are clients of Deltek. So if you don't know, or if you see a company that holds a contract that's one of those mid-tier, small-tier things, there's points of contact. And if they're a client of Deltek, there's probably anywhere from 10 to 20 to 30 points of contact, VP of business development, what have you. And I don't know them. They don't know me. But if you can put together a pretty strong, not a 20-page email or anything, but just a conversational email that indicates what my value proposition is to you around this thing, odds are probably at least 50-50 if you do it the right way that someone's probably going to respond and say, you know, why are you contacting me on this? What do you bring to the table? And to me, that's again sales 101 type of things. But there are tools out there, and there's events out there, and there's associations out there, whether it's IAC or FCA or NVTC or what have you, to be able to go out and shake hands, start identifying some people that make sense to talk to. Mm-hmm. But you know, a lot of these organizations, especially a small services company, they really don't have a sales force per se.
Right.
They have smart people, and they've won a couple contracts, but they don't have anybody that understands the process of a sale. And really, that's really what you're doing. You're trying to present a value proposition and ask for something to happen.
I think this market is still very much about relationships, and that certainly hasn't changed. Despite the challenges of getting government people to show up at events, that part has changed. It's much more difficult to do that. But from the point of view of teaming, I think to Scott's point, it's still very much about relationships, though we have seen technology in the social media side come into play as a much more powerful role and tool for connecting people, at least establishing the relationship, if not leading to the conclusion or an engagement or specific partnership.
Yeah, and LinkedIn is one of those things, especially around companies that you're not familiar with. They're in there, and you can reach out through that and do the same thing. But again, there needs to be a reason to connect as to, I saw your name in LinkedIn and what have you.
Well, yeah, but there's ways to get on their radar on LinkedIn you may not have elsewhere. Like, I'm doing work with a top five wash tech company right now, and in my individual network I have about 20 first degree connections but 1450 second degree connections with that company.
Yeah.
And if you're playing that LinkedIn game properly, there are ways to get on their radar there that are much more comfortable for techies who aren't salespeople.
Yeah, I've heard some very good successful stories about connecting through LinkedIn in a lot of different ways.
It's a cool tool. Final thoughts?
Well, I think a lot's been made of the sequester, and I don't think it's nearly as bad as people think it is. If you think about some of the major movements in the market that we've had in other parts of the economy, like the housing industry, the stock market crash, though we're on the heels of yesterday's pretty significant bump in the road. But in the scheme of things, the sequester is a relatively small bump in the road, and we're paying way too much attention to it. It's obviously a lot more disruptive this year because it happened halfway through the fiscal year. It's probably going to be around next year. But what most people don't know is next year's sequester cap is actually higher than this year. So we're actually on a path of 1 to 2 percentage point increases in federal spending, even with the sequester in place. Bit more challenging in the defense world because of the dynamics of their budget, and their budgets are planned so much further out in advance. But for the most civilian agencies, it's really not, in the scheme of things, that big a deal.
From the SI community, I haven't heard a lot of complaints at all, except for a few programs, some programs being slipped. They're not being canceled, but they're being slipped. But they're telling me that conversations are happening now within government that have never happened before, where they really, really have to take a look at new ways of doing business and consolidation and shared services and what have you. So I think it's given the integrators somewhat of a boost, not necessarily financially, but from relooking at how to go to market into these agencies and having true conversations about saving money and improving processes now that wasn't happening before.
Okay. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me today. This is not my day job. If you need help with your marketing programs, please give me a call. You can find me on LinkedIn. And if you want to find out what's going on with the Government Market Master Program, join the Government Market Master Group on LinkedIn. And thank you for listening to AmTower Off-Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.